What's happening?
What's out there?
What's going on?
In the Arctic?
In the Northern Bering?
In the U.S. Chukchi Sea?
In the Northern Bering and Chukchi Seas.
This is the fourth and last story about the Arctic Ecosystem Integrated Survey, or Arctic ICE. It's a big project, one that has scientists examining all aspects of the marine ecosystems of the Northern Bering and Chukchi Seas.
Being a scientist, you want to know everything.
We're interested in
king crab, snow crab, Arctic cod, pollock.
The salmon that you love.
Ice melt.
Food web.
Climate change.
There's so many questions.
Are they consuming prey items that are more from the seafloor?
How that relates to environment.
What that species is.
How the biology of the Chukchi Sea works.
This is a team that you would want out there in the field doing the research.
Support for this story comes from research grants from the North Pacific Research Board, the Bureau of Ocean and Energy Management, and the Alaska Coastal Impact Assistance Program. Music by I Am Dism and DJ Alternative. I'm Amanda Compton. In earlier stories on the Arctic Ice Research Project, we heard about the fieldwork that was conducted aboard large commercial pollock vessels in the summers of 2012 and 2013. Here, we'll explore the question.
We've come back from the field with a ton of samples. What happens next?
That's Dr. Franz Mueter, the lead investigator of the Arctic Ice Project. He says that on the research ships, the teams of scientists could only conduct very basic measurements of the fish they were collecting.
Even if we could do some of the laboratory analyses on the boat, it doesn't really make sense because we want to maximize our time to collect samples. A lot of the samples also require instrumentation that we don't have available in the boat.
The information the researchers return from the sea with has to be useful. For example, Lauren Devine, a PhD candidate who studies snow crab and was on the Arctic Ice research cruises, is looking at the role snow crab play in the food web.
You can tell a lot from stomach contents, where they fit in the food web, and compare that with other organisms like sea stars and fish species and everything that lives in the bottom.
But the ship wasn't equipped for stomach dissection. Devine had to freeze the crab on board and take them back to a laboratory. Other samples of fish had to get back to labs as well, which was not a simple process, as Dr. Mueter explains.
Logistically, it's actually quite complicated to deal with all the samples that you're getting back at the end of the field season because we had a lot of individual fish that a lot of scientists laid claim to.
Parts of one fish or crab collected on board the research cruises might be distributed among several laboratories studying different things.
We might take a small sample that the geneticists use for their analysis and then take another tissue sample that tell us about what they have been eating as well. And then the stomachs of the same fish may go to a lab that looks at stomach contents.
Ear bones may be extracted to go to another lab to check the age of a fish. With so many scientists interested in so many different aspects of the fish samples, it's important to maximize the use of each individual fish. But that's all initial legwork.
Being on the boat is really the smallest portion of the overall work that we do. There's whole weeks and in some cases years of laboratory work.
The lab work is so extensive that whole teams of people are devoted just to those tasks.
Oh man, this is becoming like a 5-year master's.
That is Noelle Smay. A lot of her graduate study research is laboratory work.
This is a pipetter. You don't want to contaminate all your samples, so we use a separate tip each time that we take a sample and manipulate it in some way, and then we eject it and then use a new tip.
It's April 2016, and Smay is in the process of preparing DNA samples of saffron cod. She hopes to figure out if there are genetically distinct populations by looking at sections of DNA called microsatellites.
And they're basically just like little junk repeats in DNA that don't, to our knowledge, do anything, but it's very good for, you know, identifying certain species and where they're from, potentially.
For Smay's work, she needed tissue samples from saffron cod that were hauled up in trawl nets during the research cruises. The process of isolating DNA from the samples involved many steps: preservation, denaturing, amplification. But for the purposes of this story, she gave a simplified explanation.
It's a bunch of transferring things in and out. At some point, you end up with a little DNA pellet at the bottom of a tube.
Solid.
Yeah, so it'll be spun down and solid. So you have to hydrate it again to get what I work with.
Years is the time frame of much of the Artegeist research process, as Dr. Meter explains.
After you have your laboratory analyses done, then you're left with a bunch of numbers on the computer and you start the data analysis and writing up the results, and that will actually go on for years. The samples that we collected may well be used 20 years from now for new analyses that we might not even have thought of.
A lot of what was collected in the Northern Bering and Chukchi Seas and the following laboratory analyses is raw data, numbers, codes, notes on plankton, seabirds, ocean temperatures. You can measure a million Artecod and take a million water samples, but until you organize that data, it's difficult to make conclusions like Artecod are bigger in certain areas because the food was better.
And you can't really put those things together until you have all the different data streams coming together and having them in one place on your computer to look at them.
We may learn a lot about the Arctic from the samples and the lab work that go into publishing scientific papers, says Dr. Meter.
But ultimately, what is this information being used for or useful for? And that's a variety of things.
The information can be used to show how fish populations change in a changing climate.
And we're interested in establishing the baseline of what's there to be able to say whether climate change or oil and gas development, other human impacts, how they might affect the ecosystem, so we can monitor that in the future.
Other entities interested in the research are management agencies.
They use that for like writing environmental impact statements. For example, if you have a very important nursery area where a lot of the young fish are concentrated, that may not be the best place for any kind of development. So you can use the information for deciding where and at what times of the year development is okay or not okay.
But Dr. Meter warns against relying on information like that collected on his project to provide a concrete guide.
As scientists, we're often asked to give specific answers because people are interested in what's the effect, you know, give me A, B, C, or give me a number. We don't want to give the public a false impression that we know what's going to happen in the Chukchi Sea in 20 years under climate change, because we don't. We have to build a management system that can deal with unexpected and uncertain futures.
With all this reporting, analyzing, sharing, and collaboration, it's inevitable that plans for future work are entertained. If there is a phase two to the project, many of the scientists involved already have lists of goals and agendas, like Lauren Devine, the snow crab researcher.
I would like Arctic ice in the future to look into ways that we can monitor a longer length of the year. What's happening when we can't see under the ice? So focused snow crab studies should definitely be a part of Arctic ice in the future. There's a lot of unanswered questions.
Regardless of whether the Arctic ice program will continue into phase two, Devine thinks it accomplished something beyond just gathering information.
Scientists have a tendency to have tunnel vision and focus on just the questions they're interested in asking and kind of ignore all the other pieces. Whereas with Arctic ice in particular, there's open collaboration and there's that real desire to see everybody's pictures and see everything in context. And I think that is something that a lot of scientists are not used to.
The story you just heard was the fourth and last in a series on the Arctic Ice Research Project. For more information on the project, visit the Arctic Ice webpage on the University of Alaska Fairbanks website. Music by I Am Dism and DJ Alternative. In Juneau, I'm Amanda Compton.